You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. You know, one of the things I've enjoyed the most and done the least during the last 90 days are battlefield studies. I've met so many unbelievable people doing these things that I'm embarrassed that I haven't done one in the last 90 days. So, I want to say the last one I did was the Battle of Gitlin's Corner, which has really led me to this. And so when we talk Vietnam, we have to play Vietnam music, right? So throughout the course of interviewing, it started with General Butch Neal. And then after that interview, is when I got an email from Jack Riley, who's become a hero of mine. Jack Riley is one of the best guys I've ever met. And I say that not to embellish his record or who he is, because he certainly doesn't need that. His record doesn't need it. But in the course of this job, you run across people and then you learn about them. And all Jack Riley has ever done is been, whether he was in Vietnam or at home in Alabama or moved around the country, is he's taken care of his Marines. He's been a leader, selflessly devoted to his brothers that he fought with. And as they have come home, as they've struggled, he's put together reunions and been a driving force in that. He's helped them through their struggle with Agent Orange, which they fought in for a great percentage of the time they were in Vietnam. They were exposed to it. And so I met him when he sent me an email about Butch Neal's interview about the Battle of Gitlin's Corner. So then we did, I want to say, a couple different interviews with Jack about the Battle of Gitlin's Corner and what it was like to come home. So from there, it kind of got me interested in content, because I didn't know, honestly, I did not know much about it. I knew, I'd heard of it, but I didn't know, you know, for instance, Tim Lynch, whose father and uncle, you know, fought in Vietnam. I mean, he'd start reeling off Vietnam. He'd reel off operations. He'd reel off years. He'd reel off terms like Leatherneck Square and the Rock Pile and, you know, Marble Mountain and things that, you know, Jiaolin, right? He's speaking a language that I didn't really understand. So I've been wanting to do this for a while. Yeah, I have. And so let me kind of walk you through an orientation of, what we're going to talk about. Okay, so if you look at a map of the northern part of South Vietnam, okay, this is the area that we're talking about. The major things that Marines, you know, hear about, right? You hear about the, you know, our base at Da Nang, and as well you should, Okay. So it had an airfield, right? Had a harbor there, right? Right. South of Da Nang is the city of Chulai. People heard of that. As you go north, right, along the north-south highway, you have Fubai, you have Wei City. Okay, you go further north, and you get to the infamous bridge at the city of Dong Ha, where there was the regimental headquarters, the division headquarters of the 3rd Marine Division. Right, so you're up in the northern part of what is known as I Corps, and in the province of Quang Tri. So you go from the coast, and the highway is about 'm drawing a line. And measure distance on my map here, it is 8.5 miles inland. So if you go 8.5 miles inland, you find the north-south major thoroughfare. Okay, so Dong Ha, 3rd Marine Division. You go further north, and right south of the DMZ, right? So the demilitarized zone is a mile on either side of a river that runs through, that runs, that, that they used as the dividing line between North and South Vietnam. Okay? So you have a fire base by the name of Jiao Lin, which is the first one inland from the ocean. The infamous South China Sea, of all places. So Jiao Lin is about, as the crows flies, about 4.5 miles. Con Tien Combat Base is about 11.25 miles. And so those are the bases that you hear about. Leatherneck Square is a square. The lower right-hand corner is Dong Ha. The upper right-hand corner is Jiao Lin, right? The upper left-hand corner is Con Tien, and the lower left-hand corner is Cam Lo, right? So that is the area known as Leatherneck Square. Good. In this fight, you hear Camp Carroll further off to the west. You hear the Rock Pile, Khe San. To the west, and then Khe San is further to the, it's west southwest, so more west than southwest. Okay, you've heard General Lynch come on the program and talk about a fight that I want to say, was it 226 he was with? But anyway, he was the OPSO at a place called LZ Margo, just south of the DMZ, but well west of the area we're talking about. So this area of Leatherneck Square was a scene of incredible fighting, and a lot of it existed in the area of Con Tien. Now, Con Tien is stuck. So the river, as you can imagine, is not a straight line, right, that the DMZ is based on. It ebbs and flows. Well, where Con Tien is, it is stuck into the most northern part of this plateau. It butts right up against what the DMZ is, and it was within range of heavy artillery on the North Vietnamese side of the border. Artillery that was hidden in caves and was very difficult to find, let alone effect. So that's kind of a basic orientation of where Con Tien is. And let me just give you a little bit of an overview of it. So Con Tien, about 3 kilometers from North Vietnam. It's in the Jin Lo District, county, if you will, of the Quang Tri Province, state, if you will. Right? The fighting lasted, significant fighting, from February 1967 through February 1968, right? And in February 1968, you know, Tet has kicked off, and the fight goes other places. All right. Who are the belligerents? North Vietnamese, right, on one side. The North Vietnamese regular army, not the Viet Cong, the North Vietnamese regular army, and on the other side, United States and South Vietnamese army. Commanders, Lew Walt, right? So General Walt is a veteran of World War II, Korea, and Vietnam. 2 Navy Crosses for heroism during World War II. And so he's one of the leaders of this, and General Cushman, right? He's going to be going to become the 25th Commandant of the Marine Corps. Fought in the battles of Guam, Bougainville, and Iwo Jima. So 3rd Marine Division is higher headquarters, about 9,000 Marines. Estimated total number of troops is between 8 and 12,000 who fought. Casualties. Right, in a year, 1,419 Americans killed. South Vietnamese casualties unknown. Right, North Vietnamese casualties 7,563, according to U.S. body counts, and 168 were captured. All right, so Contien originally established on this big plateau. You can see the water. Right? That's how far you can see. You can see the water. So it's got incredible observation, which also means everybody else can see you. So it's established as a special forces camp until the Marines take it over in December of 1966. Together with Zhao Lin, Dong Ha, and Cam Lo, as I told you before, it forms Leatherneck Square. It's the upper left-hand corner of Leatherneck Square. It was intended to be used as one of the bases for the infamous, quote-unquote, McNamara Line. No relation, no relation, no relation. Okay? The McNamara Line. Okay, it was an operational strategy employed between 1966 and 1968. Designed to prevent infiltration of South Vietnam by North Vietnamese Army forces from North Vietnam and Laos. It was designed to run across the DMZ. The eastern part included fortified field segments, and Bob Nielsen talks about this stuff, right? Right, you had high-tech acoustic and heat detecting sensors on the ground so that there could be this interdiction from the air. So you had this line that was plowed, right, through the DMZ as part of it. You had electronic surveillance. You had mines. And you had American forces at choke point. So that was the barrier system that was going to be put in place that is referred to as McNamara Line. Contien is part of that. All right. The firebase was strategically important because it offered unfettered views 15 kilometers to the east, to the coast, and into North Vietnam. So obviously it's a prominent point, right? So, what I want to do now is I want to play for you a report that Dan Rather did about Contien. Okay? And so when you go looking for interviews and things like that, honestly, I didn't find much. I didn't find much. So this is Dan Rather, and you're going to hear Marines in their own words, which you know that I love. And then you're going to hear another interview with a Marine, a young Marine, who's living at Kantian. And then after that, you'll hear, and I'll kind of bomb in the middle of this stuff. But, and then after that, you're going to hear a Marine infantry officer by the name of Otto Lirak, who I alluded to before, but he wrote a book called The Road of 10,000 Pains, The Destruction of the 2nd MVA Division by the U.S. Marines in 1967. And the most interesting part of that is that he meets and interviews former NVA's officer. Right. So the perspective of the book is very, very, very interesting in and of itself. So, with that said, here's the report that you'll find, Dan Rather's report, which makes up the most of the core of any, like, video of content. So here's Dan Rather.
What's that?
Where is it?
We can't reach those big guns, and they just keep dropping in. There's nothing you can do. It's just like being a big bull guy on top of a hill, and you're just sitting there waiting. You can't be safe. You can be lucky. That's it.
You can't be safe. You can be lucky.
That's it.
Stuff landing all over, bouncing off you, and you're just as scared every time. And it gets worse. The closer they get, the more they throw. The more you get scared. Then you get up. It's a wonderful feeling just to be alive and be able to walk around after one of those.
If I live 100 years, I'll just never, ever be able to tell the story the way it really happened. These young kids who, you just run up to them, and when we were all boxed in, they were all around, and they were all over our perimeter, and we're throwing grenades, and I got pretty close, and just run up to one of these kids and say, Marine, we're going to get out of here, aren't we? And the kid look up to you and say, you're damn right we are, Skipper.
Those Marines are talking about a place named Kantian, an obscure American outpost in Vietnam, as Tarawa, Iwo Jima, and Guadalcanal were once obscure.
By the way, that's Mike Wallace, not Dan Rather.
Kantian is a bitterly exposed target just 2 miles below the DMZ. American Marines have been under fire there since last May. In just the last 4 weeks, they have suffered over 70 dead, 1,000 wounded. In the next half hour, we shall examine the ordeal of Kantian.
This is a CBS News special report. The ordeal of Kantian. This broadcast is brought to you by West... Here is CBS News correspondent Mike Wallace.
Kantian is here. 2 miles south of the demilitarized zone at the narrow top of South Vietnam, 12 miles inland from the South China Sea. It is a desolate hilltop collection of guns and bunkers looking north across the DMZ into North Vietnam. Its crucial importance lies in the fact that it's on a main infiltration route into the south. The loss of Kantian could help open the way for the estimated 35,000 communist troops now massed in the DMZ area. Its loss would block the construction of that electronic barrier along the DMZ to seal off South Vietnam from the North. But more than that, its loss would give the North Vietnamese that one big, elusive propaganda victory they've been searching for at such a cost in lives. They would prize a victory at Kantian as a miniature replica of their victory over the French at Dien Bien Phu in 1954. Kantian is vulnerable. It is the least defensible of any of the American outposts because it's so close to North Vietnamese territory. The enemy artillery, about 100 big guns plus mortars and rockets, can pound Kantian around the clock with devastating effect. And our ground troops cannot go into North Vietnam to knock out those guns. For the Marines at Kantian, this is what it's like.
Thank you.
You're seeing Marines running around in the mud, hopping in trenches. Diving in holes, and this is an artillery gun that they're near filming.
Emergency medevac, ASAP. Top priority.
All right, put my feet on.
They film a medevac as he's on a stretcher. Looks to be a routine. Well, I should say routine. But he's alert and active. Old CH-34 helicopter.
Hey, how many did you get? Yeah, okay, take it easy,
Red.
Tank retriever bringing back a Marine who's wounded and shot in the leg. You know, the thing that always strikes you about watching Vietnam Marines is how young they are. They're young guys. The Kaesan documentary that Ken Rogers does taught me that. So this is a series of shots of Marines putting on battle dressings for each other, which is kind of interesting because you're obviously affecting the narrative, right? Changing their boots, throwing artillery brass in giant craters full of brass, cleaning weapons. All the stuff of quality video. This is a report that ran on CBS.
What happened to your squad?
They was hit. Most of them was hit by shrapnel, and there was medevac.
Well, tell me, you came here at full strength?
Oh, I had 13 men when I came.
And it's 4 days later now, and how many are still here?
Six.
I think we're just occupying ground and losing too many men. I'm losing too many men. If we were to stay here too much longer, we wouldn't have much left of this platoon, let alone the company. I see about 3-4 people get it a day. Not real bad, but enough to be medevac. Cut my platoon down.
Well, isn't that all part of war, as the generals say?
Sure it is, but for 7 months up here, one battalion ain't going to have much left if that's part of war. That'll rotate a little more, I think. Send us back where we can get new men and train them. See, we're getting new men out here. They're coming out, well, what you might call green, and then they don't know really how to act.
The rifles have been jamming, the mud's been has slowed everything down, and the artillery comes in everywhere, and just gets pretty futile and frustrating sometimes.
The really depressing part about it is, there isn't really much you can do, you know what I mean? You see the rounds come in, you see your buddies get blown away and wounded and stuff like that.
Well, I can't say that I'm scared stiff, but I'm scared. I mean, after a while, you know it's going to come, and you can't do nothing about it. And you just look to God. It's about the only thing you can do.
Well, do you get any idea from up around Kanchen how the war is going?
Yes. If we don't get some more people up in this area real quick, and we don't get some more B-52s real fast, then these people are going to be all the way down to Da Nang before anybody knows it. Does everybody agree with that?
100%.
What kind of support are the Marines getting?
General Westmoreland says the Americans are responding with the greatest concentration of conventional firepower in history. The U.S. artillery fire is 10 times greater than the enemy's. It comes from Dong Ha, Cam Lo, Jo Lin, the other outpost corners of what is called Leatherneck Square, and from these big guns at Camp Carroll. The batteries fire off as many as 10,000 shells daily, lobbing them over the heads of the men at Contien deep into the demilitarized zone. And then there are the B-52 bombers striking from nearby Thailand. They pound the zone day in, day out with tons of explosives. With this saturation, why haven't the North Vietnamese positions been destroyed? Marine commanders say the enemy guns, most of them highly mobile, roll in and out of deep caves and tunnels. Only a direct hit can silence them. And there has been no silence at Con Tien. The story of how Con Tien came to be a miniature Korea began last May. The Marines there were in construction battalions clearing strips to help protect against attacks. The outpost was little more than a few trenches dug in a hilltop, still green and unscorched, manned by 300 South Vietnamese civilian irregulars advised by a handful of American Special Forces troops. The few bunkers looked more like temporary homes for the men who were there to operate the graders and earth movers. But they were some protection against occasional artillery attacks. Then things got rougher. On the morning of May the 9th, burning tanks and personnel carriers marked a battle that had begun at 2:30 a.m. and lasted till after daybreak. The hilltop was strewn with dead. 200 of them, like this one. North Vietnamese regulars. The enemy had struck with a force of 1,200 men. Captured enemy weapons were gathered from all over the perimeter. The cost to the Americans in that first battle at Con Tien included 124 wounded. Of these, 110 were Marines, the rest Special Forces men. And there were our own dead, 44 Americans altogether, all of them Marines, the first to fall at Con Tien. For the next few months, there was less action than preparation for action. The Marines had come to stay, to take control of Con Tien from the South Vietnamese. The plan now was to establish a post on the hilltop that could be more easily defended. That meant more bunkers and well-protected gun emplacements. The expectation then was for another ground assault.
Let me just read you a few of the details since we're kind of doing an overview about Con Tien. At 0300 on the 8th of May, 300 rounds of mortar and artillery fire hit the base, while North Vietnamese Army sappers with Bangalore torpedoes breached the perimeter wire. At 04, two battalions, 1,200 soldiers, of the 812th Regiment, armed with flamethrowers, overran the Marine stronghold. At the time of the attack, the base was defended by the command element and Delta Company, 1st Battalion, 4th Marines. The well-organized attack fell primarily on Delta Company's northern perimeter. Fierce hand-to-hand combat along the perimeter by the outnumbered Marines eventually led to the repelling the initial attacking force. Now, that's a Marine rifle company against 1,200 NVA soldiers. A relief column from Alpha Company was sent with an M42 Duster, two LVTs, and two quarter-ton trucks. The M42 was hit by an RPG-7, and the LVT-5 and one truck were destroyed by flamethrowers and satchel charges. A large number of casualties were sustained by the Marines of Alpha Company. By 09, some 6 hours later, the enemy had withdrawn, leaving 197 killed and 8 prisoners. Marines had suffered 44 killed and 110 wounded. That's the equivalent of a Marine rifle company, right? Was either killed or wounded there. Only two Marine rifle companies were involved in the attack. 50% of the Marines involved in that became casualties. Yeah, pretty amazing. So this is the start of Con Tien.
enemy artillery was fairly inactive until July, when it got busier. The Americans retaliated with airstrikes. For the rest of July and August, the Marines at Contien used their own guns to good effect. The ammunition, an endless supply, came in daily, and it was used up daily. This was the end of a supply lifeline that began in Da Nang and arrived at Contien by way of Dong Ha, 6 miles to the south. There were tents nearby to house a complement that included about 1,000 men. No matter how you look at it, those were better days. There was more time for things like the casual cleaning of weapons. But nothing at Contien has been casual since September came.
Let me just make a comment about the cleaning of rifles. You're going to hear about the M16 being introduced to Marine forces here. And it's an issue because it doesn't come out of the blocks very well.
For the first 25 days of this month, Contien had to fight back against ground assaults and a sudden calculated escalation of enemy artillery, the most intense artillery barrage of the war. At times, the shouts of incoming could be heard above the noise of our own guns. There has been a slight let-up in the last few days, but Marines still must patrol the perimeter of Contien, and for these men, the danger is multiplied by the threat of ambush. The kind of war that's going on around Contien inspired one young Marine to put his feelings into a poem.
When youth was a soldier and I fought across the sea, we were young and cold hearts of bloody savagery. Born of indignation, children of our time, we were orphans of creation and dying in our prime.
What made you write that poem?
Well, just the way things are.
The commanders in Vietnam, the men who must decide when ordeals must be born, look at the ordeal at Contien from a different vantage point. We talked with General William Westmoreland, commander of American ground forces, and Lieutenant General Robert Cushman, who commands the Marines there.
There have been some questions from outside and in your own command structure, all the way down to some privates I met on.
This is General Cushman.
Contien, about the defense of that outpost, and some who perhaps aren't as confident as the general may be.
Well, when you sit in a place such as that and night comes on, you really have to rely upon yourself and upon supporting fires, and naturally the confidence may not be as great as it is back here, where I can see the many forces that can be brought to bear, and which those right on the spot may not be aware. I am confident that we can hold this area, and we have been doing it. Furthermore, from what reports we've had from prisoners and documents, we've been hurting the enemy badly.
They have attempted to make...
This is General William C. Westmoreland.
It appear that they are winning a military victory. Their target is American public opinion. They had hoped that by inflicting these casualties, it being fully understood by them that the casualties inflicted upon their ranks were unknown to us, that they would achieve their psychological victory. And this is the only way they can conceivably win this war.
Contien, then, you're saying, is not really a military action, but a political or psychological warfare action.
Precisely. Their objective is political and psychological. It is designed to weaken the will of the American people, to make it appear in American and public and world opinion that they are stronger than they are in fact, and to discourage.
There seems little doubt that it is the administration's resolve to stay at Contien. The president made that clear last Friday night in his speech to the nation, when he pointed to the Marines up at the DMZ as the real peacekeepers. Lyndon Johnson understands that a defeat or even a withdrawal now at Contien could be, for him, a political Dien Bien Phu. The president's dilemma is how to persuade the North Vietnamese to quit up there.
You know, it's interesting you hear, right, the term Dien Bien Phu, psychological victory. This is all before Tet, right? This is all before Tet. And you hear that discussion and going on in 1967 before Tet even happens. Now, when as you read and as you hear more about these battles, right, you will hear, you know, people comment about this is the positioning forces. This was the positioning of forces that would participate in the Tet Offensive. So it's very, very historically very interesting.
Up to now, pure firepower hasn't done it, and it seems unlikely that he would order American troops into North Vietnam to do the job. Moscow and Peking would be bound to react sharply to such an escalation.
Peking, for all you young people, is Beijing. That would be the Chinese.
Time for the Marines at Contien, the months ahead look grimmer than ever. The fall monsoon rains have just begun. They will go on till February, hampering American air power, depriving the men on the ground of at least some of the air support they desperately need. The artillery duel at Contien will go on and on. This battle is different from any other action in the war in that there is no let-up. Day after unchanging day. And as long as the North Vietnamese can resupply their troops and guns, as long as they can send down reinforcements, there is little the Marines can do about it. Mike Wallace, CBS News, New York.
All right, so that's Mike Wallace's. And if you start looking around for things to watch about Contien, that is probably the number one thing you're going to see. And people repackaged it and whatnot. But that's the primary report on it. I want to play just this is the interview, looks like, with a Lance Corporal or a PFC. And somebody, you know, the soldier on the ground, what does he or she think?
Here at Contien, near the demilitarized zone, this is Lance Corporal Buddy Mann from Duval's Bluff. Buddy, how long have you been here?
About 36 days.
Have you seen a lot of action during those 36 days?
Just a little bit, not too awful much. A little incoming here and there.
How does it feel to be down in your bunker with all of that artillery coming in?
A little bit shaky. Me, I'm a natural born chicken.
We understand back home that this is one of the roughest places in the war. Would you agree with that?
I certainly would. It is pretty bad up here.
Could you tell us about some of your experiences since you've been here?
A lot of artillery incoming rounds and mortars. There's not much you can say about it.
Have you had some pretty close calls?
Not too close, but pretty close. I'm still here.
What do you do when you hear those rounds coming in?
You get out just about as fast as you can. Then after they slack up a little bit, you find your hole and keep your head down.
How long have you been here?
36 days.
In Vietnam?
4 months. 4 months and 2 days.
How much longer have you got?
Well, I hope just 8 more months, but maybe 9 to do in Vietnam.
How does this country compare with Duval's Bluff?
No, none whatsoever. I'd like to be back there.
How much longer are you going to be here at Contien?
We're supposed to leave in the morning. I hope so.
Going to go on a little R&R?
Oh, I'd like that. I'd like to go to Hawaii and meet my wife.
How long have you been married?
About a year and 6 months.
When was the last time you saw your wife?
In June.
She's living back in Duval's Bluff now?
With her mother.
Are you going to get home for Christmas this year?
No. No way.
Will this be your first Christmas away from home?
Right. First one away from home. I've got a little girl, 3 months old, I've never seen before.
What's her name?
Janet Ellen.
Do you get many letters from your wife telling you about your little girl?
Every other day, and sometimes every day. We can't get mail up here every day on account of the weather. Most every day we have a mail call, I get a letter.
You'll be glad to get out of here, huh?
Oh, certainly will.
There you have it. Not a whole lot changes. You could have recorded that interview. Hell, you could go record it today in Afghanistan. Except now, you know, he gets a letter every day. Now we have email, so the world's changed a little bit. So, two pretty cool announcements. One is, we'll, we'll get after the Battle of Kantian. And the DMZ battles that raged for the better part of a year that destroyed an NVA division, as well as, was the scene of some of the most ferocious fighting in the Vietnam War. So, and again, you hear about these fights, and honestly, I mean, it's humbling to listen to. Because we haven't fought like that. We haven't fought like that since the Vietnam War. And, you hear, what was that corporal said? I just want everybody to know how proud I am of you. 19 years old, corporal was killed that same day. Come on, are you kidding me? But anyway, that's our culture. That's what makes it so amazing. And that's what's so cool about my job, telling these stories and again, but doing it in long format. And so you're able to kind of have these discussions about these nuanced elements. So, anywho, have a great day. We'll be back tomorrow, I think, with the Lynch and Kenny event. And then, I'm not really sure what we're doing on Thursday yet. It'll come to me. It always does. So, again, big announcement. Almer and Ready is going to embark on a educational series. Yeah, how about that? And it's a series designed to have discussions, in-depth discussions, about this idea of discipline and with guys who have practiced it in their career. So as I kind of put this, right this second, Generals Halleck, wait, let me do this in alphabetical order, or I'll screw it up. Generals Bedard, Halleck, Mattis, and Van Riper have all said, yeah, we'd love to participate. So looking forward to discussing discipline with them. And again, discipline, Marine Corps versus our culture. How much of our culture can we absorb? How do we do that dance? Right, knowing that that somebody's going to locate, close with, and destroy the Chinese, and more than likely there'll be Marines involved in that. So, how do we do that to retain the skills that we need to retain, right? And coexist with a culture that doesn't particularly care for those kind of things. So, that's pretty interesting, right? The how do we do discipline on the backside of a conflict? Yeah, how do you do that? When you have these salty dogs, you say, yeah, it's all chicken shit now. The only thing that really is that, and that permeates, right, the culture. It's intimidating for young leaders. And I love General Zinni's little vignette about that. Stay tuned, you'll hear about that. And so, I can tell you how excited I am to do that. So, thanks for listening on a Tuesday. Don't touch that dial. Palmering Radio. Over and out.